This is the conversation on statewide member-supported Hawaii Public Radio. I'm Chris Vandercook. And coming up, we're going to go live to Catherine Cruz, who is at the state capitol for the opening day of the legislative session. We're also here in the studio with our contributing editor, Neil Milner, and this is a legislative session that's going to happen in a kind of fraught atmosphere in some ways, Neil.
Yeah, it is. I was about to say before what happened on Saturday happened that this session didn't look like a session in which a sudden, highly visible incident had happened with a big surprise, and that sometimes that happens and the legislature becomes overwhelmed with that one issue. It happened a couple of times on same-sex marriage. Mm-hmm. I was going to say that isn't the case here. It may be the case here because this false alarm is going to bleed into a number of kinds of investigations and concerns that's going to take up some time, even though it's not clear what the legislature can do in terms of legislation. It's certainly going to eat up some time.
You know, prior to Saturday, Neil, I think we might have been sitting here saying there's no single defining issue to the session.
Well, I think that's right. There is no single defining issue. There is the kind of classic very difficult, if not impossible, issues to deal with that come back over and over again because, as I say, they're very hard. Certainly one of them was going to be affordable housing. Another one was going to be homeless, where in some ways we get the idea in our heads that you're going to be able to deal with it definitively, but you never deal with it definitively, not so much because the legislature's capacity, but because the problem is so ingrained, so long-term, and so large that it takes at least a lot of time. But there is nothing like that. One issue that has started to come up that is a very serious long-term issue is cesspool reform. Yeah. This one has been around for a long time. We have an enormous number of cesspools. It's a very serious problem. Everybody sees it as a serious problem. Politically and money-wise, it's a very hard one to deal with, but it's back around again.
Well, you know, one of the things that happens with an election cycle is that frequently for an elected official, it's to your advantage to kick the can down the road. We hear that expression all the time. So a lot of the issues that come to a head are issues that previous office holders may have postponed.
Well, we have a history of postponing issues here, for sure. It's part of the tradition of the legislative process.
Yeah,
really. And you postpone them by sending them out to a committee for more studies. But in fairness to the legislature, some of these issues are so intractable and so long-term that they can go on forever that way. And I think there are some of those. There are other issues that kind of keep crawling and crawling along that develop a kind of turtle-like atmosphere on their own. And you know, one of them that I've talked about before is medical marijuana, that we're almost through with the second decade from when the enabling rules came out for going for enabling process forward, and we still don't have medical marijuana out there totally. This is not because that's an intractable issue or hard to figure out.
Well, the issue that's there is a pretty intractable, or at least hard to figure out, issue going to be facing this session, namely death with dignity, as is sometimes described. I mean, that's,
although it's received less publicity this time, and some of the most important spokespeople have been less involved in the past, John Ratcliffe, for one. The death with dignity one is one that I would be very surprised if it passes. I don't have any inside information about what's going on, but I don't think the momentum is in favor of passing it. At least twice now, we came fairly close. It didn't pass. I don't see what's going to throw this thing over the threshold of passing, because the legislature faces what legislators hate to face, and that is very strong feelings on both sides.
I'm surprised to hear what you say about death with dignity, Neil, because I had really gotten the impression that that had sort of reached critical mass.
Well, I've been wrong before, as you might know, maybe it surprises you. But I think, again, I'm going basically on the kinds of the sorts of dynamics that the legislature uses, where you have very strong opinions on both sides. It's a very difficult issue to compromise on. And I don't know what's come forward to throw it over to one side.
Well, what do you think it would take? to move it to?
I don't know. I guess some of it might be that if they decided that the objection of religious leaders and some doctors to it would change it, I think some kind of compelling event. But I don't see anything on the horizon, or if there's a change in the composition of the legislators. I don't see any of that happening, you know, where the body has really changed. So, as I say, it's not like I have inside information on this. I'm just looking at the usual kind of cues, which is people making it more visible than it was before, the dynamics being different in terms of opposition and so on. And I don't see anything different that's going to make it more likely to pass it, and that the legislature might just let this slide.
Bill Dorman, our news director, is joining us. And Bill, we were just kind of kicking off this discussion of today's opening day by talking about the issues in play, and you know how there's one, obviously preparedness has now become the number one issue. It's been sort of kicked to the very top. But we're kind of going over some of the other issues that are going to be discussed.
You know, it's interesting that idea that things go out with a plan in terms of the week before the legislative session and the weeks leading up to it. And obviously, this time things changed very radically as of Saturday morning. I know that Catherine Cruz spoke with the governor earlier here. I'm not sure if we have Catherine on the line, actually.
I think we're still working
okay.
on that.
As we do that, this idea, for example, Scott Psyche said that he pitched out his planned
right.
speech and
yeah.
just going through. And yet, there are certain issues that are going to, of course, come back to the legislature as it goes through. Housing, homelessness, clearly education issues are yeah. going to be coming up. So there are a number of these factors that whereas the immediate opening session is going to be colored by this and of course, hearing on Friday on Saturday's events, as well as the political angle that has now been injected into all of this in terms of criticisms of Governor Ige, which perhaps were a little below the surface, have bubbled up to the top of that. And Neil, I know that's something that you've been watching as well.
Yeah, I've been watching it, and I think there's a couple things. It's certainly going to bubble up more. Nothing makes criticism of an incumbent bubble up more than a challenger making it bubble up. And so we clearly have that. Here's a couple of things I think you have to watch out for, kind of caveats. First of all, one issue is generally not enough to overcome, to beat an incumbent. The second thing is that generically incumbents do pretty well. The third thing is that it's a long ways away. That said, what's going on in this is very important because what's happened here fits into a kind of narrative about Ige that's been around almost from the beginning, and that you see politicians, and not just Hanabusa, starting to jump on, and that is that he's not very confident, he's not very definitive, and that he doesn't fix things the way he said he was going to fix them. So this fits into that kind of narrative that's going to be used over and over again in the campaign, and he's untested in his ability to counter that. And what we see in the last couple of days, if I were on the Ige campaign staff, would be very, very worried.
One of the things that you see in an emergency situation like this is that it's a game of perception.
That's absolutely right. And that's the political perception and the question of what carries into the election. Mm-hmm. On the one hand, August is very far away. On the other hand, August might come very quickly. I think, actually, we do have Catherine now live at the Capitol. Catherine, are you there?
Hi.
Hi.
I'm here.
Hi, Catherine. Good to hear your voice.
Yeah, I don't know if you can hear the hoy pounding in the background. We were able to talk to Governor David Ige. He spoke with us before he went down to listen to the speeches about what happens going forward and how he intends to deal with any political fallout. Governor, thanks for joining us. We're coming off the week with the missile mistake and the false alarm. Do you have anything new, any updates on the investigation at this point?
No, I don't have anything new to add, but just wanted to be clear that we have already implemented changes to assure that it would never happen again. We have programmed now a cancel or false alert button so that if an alert was sent out, we would be immediately able to send the notice that it was an error.
Now, your critics are having a field day with this. This is an election year, and they're going to make an issue of it this session.
Sure. You know, it's. I think that the safety of the people of the state of Hawaii is too important to make it a political issue. You know, we're committed to having a system that is reliable and trustworthy. We're committed to informing the public as soon as it's appropriate to, and we are committed to educating everyone in our community about what actions should be taken. One lesson learned from this event clearly is that many in our community hasn't really thought through what they should be doing. And so we need to be clear with businesses about what would be the best practices. Every resident should have a plan of what to do when they're at home and what to do when they're at work, and think about what action should be taken depending on where they are. And we definitely will become a stronger and more prepared community as each of us looks at where they could be and consciously thinks about what action they should take.
Now, some folks are taking you to task over the system that we have. We saw some photos of the screens, and folks think that maybe we should have a better system in place so a mistake like this doesn't happen again.
Well, we've already implemented a better system to ensure that this doesn't happen. Yes, we can make further investments, but it's a very complex system. You know, being able to communicate, as you know, Catherine, there's so many different ways that we communicate today than it used to be. Before, it was pretty easy to, you know, if you covered TV and radio, you got everybody. Today, there's digital media platforms, there's cell phones, text messages, and having a system that can provide the information via all the different media is more complicated than it used to be.
We're seeing some images of computers with passwords just taped on the screen, and folks are saying, well, you know, our system should be a lot more, I guess, safeguarded.
Certainly. The reason that I issued the executive order appointing Brigadier General Kenneth Hara is that we do want fresh eyes to look at the system, to be able to go in and examine every facet of the current system and challenge them about whether they should be further safeguards in different areas, anticipate other scenarios where, you know, if a mistake is made, that we can correct it in a much, much shorter period of time.
Is there anything you can share with us about what you might talk about in the state of the state? I know the lawmakers in both houses are going to focus, I think, on housing and homelessness as some of the top-of-mind issues this session. But is there anything else that you can share with us at this point?
No, you know, my priorities have been pretty clear. The vision is to make investments in our people. We will continue to do that. We do think that we've made tremendous progress, and the state of state will be talking about education, housing, homelessness, because that's what I hear from the people are the things that they're most concerned with.
And are you concerned at all that leaders in both the Senate and the House were there to support Congresswoman Colleen Hoonabusa when she declared her candidacy for governor?
You know, I feel very confident that our budget and our legislative proposal is focused on serving the people of Hawaii. You know, we have identified those priorities that we believe is most important and most represent the values of our community. We're going to advocate for that, and just like we always do, we know that we will all be looking at what is in the best interest of the people.
And how do you plan to handle the political fallout? Lawmakers have already scheduled a hearing for Friday. There's a movement also on the federal level. Our Hawaii delegation is, you know, asking questions.
Certainly. We will be providing with transparency what occurred and the information that we have. We would welcome the federal input. Catherine, we're the only state in the country that has initiated this activity to prepare for a ballistic missile attack, and we believe that it's important. We believe that the conversations in our community about what to do is very important and makes us a stronger community.
Okay, and so you're prepared for whatever criticism comes today or the end of the week?
We are moving forward. As I said, we have reached out to all of the civil defense all across the state and the counties to make sure that we can hear what happened there and any suggestions that they might have for things that we can improve in the system. We've already had conversations with some of the broadcasters and about things that we can further do to improve the system. So we're committed to providing the best system that we can to assure the safety and well-being of our community.
You expressed some dismay at the death threats levied against the employees of our agency. Have we filed police report?
I'm not certain. I can follow up with that.
Okay. All right. Anything else you want to share, Governor? I know that they're out passing flyers urging people to be prepared for any disaster.
I do think it really is about our community working together, government, business, individuals, to strengthen our community, to being clear about what's appropriate and what's not. To talk about best practices of a business, I can see them not being certain of what they should be doing. And so I think it's in everyone's interest to take the lessons learned from this event and really think about how we can, as a community, get stronger and better prepared.
All right. Well, thank you, Governor. We appreciate your time.
Thank you.
You're listening to The Conversation on Hawaii Public Radio. I'm Catherine Cruz.
This is The Conversation on Hawaii Public Radio. I'm Chris Vandercook, and this morning we've been broadcasting from our studio on Kaheka Street and live from the state capitol, where Catherine Cruz has been sharing the color of the morning. Earlier today, she talked with people down there at the capitol, finding out what's on their wish list for this legislative session.
All right. My name is Uncle Hercules Hui Hui.
Wish list is that our bills get passed and we still get funded. I'm with the Weed and Seed Hawaii. I'm the Weed and Seed Steering Committee Chair of Waipahu. I started in 2000 when it opened up in Waipahu, and we work closely with Eva Beach, downtown Chinatown in Kalihi. I'm a resident. That's another resident standing over there, and we just believe in the project. It started in 2000 when they came in. They weeded out all of the crime. We had a drug lab right across my house I didn't even know about. And that was really scary when they brought the barrels of jet fuel coming down the stairs with hazmat suits and all kinds of. That was really scary. And since then, we've just been doing a lot of things in community, keeping the kids, you know, on the right side of the law.
And how many communities is Weed and Seed in right now?
Right now, they're in four communities: Chinatown, Kalihi, Waipahu, and Eva Beach. And it started off in Chinatown in Kalihi.
All right. So you folks are hoping to get refunded under the grants and aid,
yes.
And you have a bill that would
do what? Yes, we have a House bill and a Senate bill. It's going to be introduced by Senator Holt and Senator Rhodes.
And again, why is Weed and Seed so important in our communities?
Just to have the presence of the Weed and Seed officers, building community relations, communicating with the community. It's not just, you know, when you call and you mention, oh, we didn't see, you're in the We Didn't See section, they'll come right away. If you see any kind of crime going on, any kind of drug transactions, all of that, we do that. But what's more important is the seeding that we do. We've been doing seeding in the schools. So we have rap sessions, read and play. We have mentorship programs, Na'alakai at the Waipahu High School and so forth. So we touch bases with all the community partnerships.
My name is Barbara Armentrout.
Barbara, tell us. I know I saw you here last session when we were talking about the rail tax. What issues are you tracking this year? What are you interested in?
This is the second year of the two-year session, so I want to see what bills they're going to that were deferred that they might bring back up. And just interested to see after that alert the other day what the legislators might bring up to do.
What are your concerns about that missile mistake?
Well, I think I heard that the bus let all the people off the bus when that happened. What if they were in a neighborhood that they don't know? I think the bus should have taken them to a school auditorium or something, because that normally is where, during a disaster, you'd go, because you just don't upload your passengers off some or download someplace, and they don't know where they're at in the neighborhood.
And then do you take the handy van?
I take the paratransit, yeah.
And so tell us, what would your concerns be if you were on the handy van?
Well, I wasn't on at the time. I had one at 9:30, and this happened an hour before. But had it continued on, they would have canceled all handy van, which is fine, you know. But my concern is what they would have done if they had passengers, what they would have done with their people.
Right. So you're a voice for the Kapuna and for
elderly, disabled mostly. Yeah. I got time, and I find I'm so busy, I don't have time.
You're too busy tracking bills.
I'm too busy tracking bills.
Well, thank you.
Okay,
appreciate
thank
it.
You.
All
for,
right.
And it's getting noisy here, but this is good. I like to see, I wish more people would come down here, not just on opening day.
That's just some of the hubbub going on at the state capitol, and those are some of the voices of citizenry that you heard from, gathered by my colleague Catherine Cruz, who is live with us down at the capitol. If you want to weigh in on issues that are important to you, do what some of those folks did. Call our talkback line at 808-792-8217. Write to us at talkback@hawaiipublicradio.org and let us know what you'll be focusing on in this legislative session.
Support for Hawaii Public Radio comes from the Scheidler Family Foundation in support of the Honolulu Museum of Art. The exhibit, Abstract Expressionism, Looking East from the Far West, includes works by Mark Rothko through January 21st. HonoluluMuseum.org.
HPR's Legacy Society members are ensuring the vitality of this station far into the future. How? By including HPR in their wills or trusts. While making this valuable contribution, these donors are also taking advantage of federal and state tax laws that may allow reduction of income taxes, lower gift and estate taxes, or provide income during their lifetime. To find out how HPR can be part of your legacy, please call us during office hours. And thanks.
Today marks a very important day in Hawaii history. It's the 125th anniversary of the overthrow of Kuiniliuokalani and the Kingdom of Hawaii. 25 years ago, the first Kunipa'a celebration or gathering drew thousands of people in a solemn acknowledgement of a turning point in our history. We sat down earlier with University of Hawaii professor and interim dean of the Hawaiian School of Knowledge about the significance of this day, Kunipa'a Kākou, and the opening day of the legislature.
This is a demonstration of Hawaiian solidarity that takes place at the Capitol on the opening day. And opening day of the legislature is on a Wednesday. So every 6 or 7 years, depending on leap year, both of these events occur on the same day, kind of like a perfect storm or a king tide, or you know what I mean? It's just every now and then this happens. And that happens to be the case here. We have the Onipa'a commemoration at the palace, and we have the opening day of the legislature and the Hawaiian gatherings at the rotunda, all happening on the same day. Now, the gatherings at the Capitol are usually about, getting the legislature to recognize contemporary problems in the society, and especially those that affect Native Hawaiians. So very often we are bringing people together that are talking about the loss of agriculture, the need to bolster and strengthen education, crime and punishment, all those kinds of issues. And that's generally what the focus is there. But at Onipa'a, the focus is much more on Hawaiian issues and especially on the history of the taking of our government. It's almost always a celebration of the courage and the grace of the Queen, Lili'uokalani, and it always comes with a reaffirmation of the people who gather to the restoration of our government.
And what role will you play that day?
I will be speaking at the Rotunda, basically talking about sovereignty air on that stage. I'll be followed by, as I understand it, Governor Wahei will also be speaking after me. And I think that, I don't know exactly what Governor Wahei will be addressing, but I suspect it will have to do with the many different ways that Hawaiians have strengthened themselves politically and culturally over the last 40 years. This is a really interesting year, 2018, because we are 40 years from the 1978 Constitutional Convention. And as you may know, in the fall, CONCON, or Constitutional Convention, will be on a referendum item on the ballot. So one of the things that's also happening this year and early this year is that people are starting to think about what that can mean for different communities, and Hawaiians are thinking about this too.
And I know there are multiple postings on social media. There are some folks that say, oh, don't go down to the palace. They're concerned whether or not it's going to be a peaceful gathering. There are other folks that say, no, we need to come together and remember the overthrow and, you know, Onipa'a.
I don't know why anyone would think it was not going to be a peaceful gathering. I don't know whether people realize that we don't just hold this once a year. We hold gatherings at the palace or at Thomas Square 4 or 5 times a year. We commemorate La Ku'oko'a. We commemorate La Ho'ioi'ea. We commemorate the birthday of the Queen. And this event, Onipa, every single year. And those gatherings are always, they're always deeply meaningful. Sometimes the speeches, and I think it's completely appropriate that in certain instances the speeches should be angry and they should be direct and forceful, because it is, you know, one of the few things that we really have as Hawaiians in a place where we are numbered and where the military sits on our lands and where the government structures themselves are determined by the United States. One of the few things that we have is our own voice. Now, if people don't want to hear those voices, that's one thing. And they really don't have to come. But we will be there, and we will be speaking, and we will be singing, which, by the way, is as anti-violent an act as I can imagine.
Well, I remember being there for the 100th anniversary, and it was very powerful, very moving, very peaceful.
Very peaceful. Now, I'm not in a position to guarantee anything, but I just don't believe that Attorney General Chin needs to worry about beefing up security. I really don't. I think that we have demonstrated over all of these years that we are perfectly capable of managing ourselves and being civil. And I think we're doing a much better job of that, by the way, than the folks in Washington, D.C.
So today, solemn gathering, time to reflect.
Time to reflect. Time to recommit. Time to know again what everyone is in the Lahui is doing in education, in agriculture, in economics, even in tourism. The many ways that Hawaiians have been re-engaging and becoming more and more of a force in the society, these are things to celebrate. And we're going to be celebrating that at the palace. We're also, I think, going to be celebrating that in front of the legislature at the rotunda.
Do you think anything will be different compared to what we saw 25 years ago?
Well, you know, there'll be a lot of people who won't be there, and that's deeply, you know, that's the kind of thing that makes you sad when you think of the numbers of people who have devoted their lives to the restoration of our government who have passed on, you know, working toward that and hoping for that and dreaming toward that. So, yeah, it's going to be different because, you know, we're not going to see some of these folks. But there are new people, and they're young people, and they're vibrant people, and there are new initiatives and new innovations, and it's going to be good to hear those people and get acquainted with them.
And many different views on where the Hawaiian community should go forward.
Absolutely, and that's another thing. You know, we recognize that Kanaka Maoli don't all agree on the eventual what sovereignty actually means. I happen to believe that it means independence from the United States and our own government again. But not everyone believes that, and not everyone wants to work toward that. But it, you know what? We do manage to actually come together and meet and talk and exchange ideas. I think that that's been one of the most promising things about being a Hawaiian in this movement, in this time.
That was John Osorio, University of Hawaii professor, interim dean of the Hawaiian School of Knowledge, who spoke earlier this morning with my co-host, Catherine Cruz. We're now joined by HPR reporter Kutuvei Hiraishi, who is at Mauna Ala in Nu'uanu for the start of a march marking Onupa'a Kakou. Kutuvei, sounds like your phone might be acting a little funny, but can you hear me all right?
I can hear you just fine, Chris. Aloha.
Hi.
Yes. Hi.
What was the
mood? I was on Mauna Ala this morning for the beginning of this march. Earlier estimates were around 3,000 leaving Mauna Ala, and these were school kids, folks who skipped work and came down to march down to the palace.
A mood of, how would you describe the mood, Kuvei?
The mood, it was one word, it truly is a unity. There was a lot of positive remarks from folks who have from across the island chain, from Hawaii, from Hawaii, Maui, Molokai, all sharing their words of their struggles. For example, the folks protecting Mauna Kea and folks with land struggles on Kauai, all saying this is the time to let down those divides and be an example of what Liliʻuokalani, the queen, would want to see here today. So very peaceful, very upbeat, and it was nice. Along the way, we had a school kids who came out and were brought to the street to wave at all the marchers. There were folks on the highways and driving by or stuck in traffic who decided to beep their horns in solidarity. So it was a good feeling.
The presence of a lot of young people there, Kuvei.
I can't hear.
Having so many young people there, Kuvei, is kind of a sign of the future, yeah?
Yes, sorry, you cut out there a little bit. But yes, the next generation was definitely here in full force. And it was nice to see folks who were here at the 1993 March, Kupuna, who remember being young kids themselves, celebrating the 100th anniversary of the overthrow and sort of passing on that baton to the younger generation of folks who led the march here today. And they all arrived at the palace right before 11 o'clock and locked in arms. You had former governor John Waihe'e, our first Native Hawaiian governor, as well as Lana Kila, one of the protectors of Mauna Kea, hand in hand, all ready to raise the Hawaiian flag over Iolani Palace.
Well, I can only imagine what it was like to be there, Kuvei, but I appreciate your perspective. And it sounds as if we've got our reporter Wayne Yoshioka.
Yes, we do. He just got back from the Gov. Should we kick it over to him?
Oh, no. This is Wayne here at the state capitol.
Hi, Wayne. Can you hear me all right?
Sure.
What's your impression of the day?
Good. Well, I heard the House Speaker give a death to the members of the 51 members of the House. Simply said that, you know, we have homelessness and affordable housing that are top priorities during this session. But also lurking in the background is his need to probably assess and provide oversight for the false missile alarm that happened on Saturday. He doesn't know really what kind of legislation would be required, but he wants to provide, I guess, leadership and oversight over the executive branch in terms of that false missile alert. On the Senate side, again, it was homelessness and affordable housing, and the Senate President, Ron Cochi, really focused on education because he said he didn't want to take away from Governor David Ige's State of the State message on Monday, January 22nd. Also talked to the governor, and he said, you know, in terms of the false missile alert, there are things that they have already done. There are things that they don't want to really focus on firing people or having someone's head over this issue. They want to move forward. They want to provide a warning system that doesn't have a single point of failure like they experienced Saturday, which is putting all of the responsibility on one person to click the right button. So I think the administration has moved on. The House, of course, will be conducting a hearing on Friday, and I think this will linger on maybe for the first 3 weeks of the session as House members try to focus on, you know, what they can do in terms of correcting this system, which I think the executive branch has moved on.
Well, Wayne, the executive branch might want to move on, but the public has something to say about that, you know? It's not up to them, and there's a sense from a lot of people I've been talking to that this isn't going to go away at the administration's schedule. You know, there are people out there saying it's going to last a lot longer than 3 weeks. And, you know, sometimes when public officials are embarrassed, they're very eager to say, let's move on. But, you know, who decides that?
Well, it's a military operation, and it should not come from the state government, which is not really their cup of tea. That is not their core competence. It should come from PACOM. It should be a seamless system that goes from the federal government, the military stationed here, because they are the eyes and ears of missile defense, and it should go to the state and to the counties seamlessly, preferably through an electronic process, without human intervention or human error. And if that is what is going to be required, there will be requirements for funding for that system, whatever it is.
Whatever it is that's exactly right. Wayne, thanks very much for talking with us.
All right.
We've been gathering, our co-host Catherine Cruz has been gathering the ideas and perspectives of people at the Capitol all morning, and let's hear some more of them.
This is my very first time to the opening day to the ledge, and what an incredible time for it to be here, being the anniversary of the overthrow. To be here as well, and all the excitement around that as well. I'm here with classmates, showing them around. I've been to the Capitol several times to do testimonies, but my classmates, it's their first time, so we're kind of showing them around, introducing them to everybody. I'm a environmentalist, so the environmental issues are very important to me as well, and social issues. We're in school for social work. So social issues and talking to the representatives and as well as the senators. About
there is a hearing, a human services informational briefing this afternoon already.
It's important, yeah, and you can see why it's already coming up. You know, you can just look around and see all the social issues, homelessness and poverty level, the state of all our the waterways and the pollution. And, you know, these are things that are important to us right now as we're day to day.
My name is Kimiko Lahela Walter. I am a staffer with the Sierra Club of Hawaii. I'm our conservation program coordinator, and a lot of what we do has to do with legislation and environmental bills and so on. So we're down here just to support the various community organizations, Kuʻi at the Capitol, the Onipaʻa, Kako, and also just to meet and greet with the legislators, to hear some of the floor speeches that are going to go on at 10 o'clock. Yeah, and just to be a part of the spirit of civic engagement and encourage other folks to come out and also engage.
And are there certain issues that the Sierra Club will be pushing this year? What's on their list?
Sure. The usual suspects, clean energy policy. Also looking at things, we're looking very closely at the cesspool issue throughout Hawaii, sea level rise, climate change issues and so forth, fresh water, clean oceans, things like that.
And if they propose a bill to assess a fee to help with the cesspool issue, where do you folks stand on that?
Right now we are supporting that, but we are open to other options. We really hope to see the community come out and come up with some innovative ideas, because this is going to be a multifaceted approach to solve this issue.
Yeah, so tell us, I mean, as far as the cesspool issue, do you know the Sierra Club testify last year on this? What was their position?
Yeah, so we did support the total phase out by 2050. We're happy that that passed. We realize that that is both far out there, but also it's going to start affecting us very soon, our clean drinking water and also our reef health. So we need to address this issue as soon as we possibly can and come up with ideas.
Are you aware of any bills that are being proposed at this point?
There are a few things on the table, yeah.
Okay. Anything else? Green energy, you said?
Clean energy. Just looking to phase out and really support the county commitments to 100% by 2045. And we will definitely support that in any way we can.
Okay. All right. Great. Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
That's my co-host, Catherine Cruz, who spoke to a number of people at the state capitol this morning about their concerns as we approach the beginning of, as we open this year's legislative session. And this year's session opens in a highly charged political environment with offices at every level of government up for grabs in an election year. Emergency preparedness has clearly been kicked to the top of the list, but as you heard, those are some of the other issues the legislature will address. The question is, how will it address them? What is the mood of the voting public? Let's pose these questions and others to our news director, Bill Dorman, and conversation contributing editor, Neil Milner, with me in the studio. It's one of those things, and we talked about this at the beginning of the show, Neil. Had we been having this discussion before Saturday, it would have been an entirely different discussion. And there's clearly there's a fairly large elephant in the room. But there are also, as we just heard from those voices from the public, a great many other issues in play.
That's right. I think we have to be careful about not overemphasizing what's going to happen in the legislature about the false warning. That's because what the legislature has going for it is essentially oversight, publicity, trying to call people accountable in a public way, but it doesn't really have that much control over the process.
It's not entirely there.
No, what it's going to try to do, I think, is to interrupt this kind of narrative that the governor said, and then I think also Wayne said, it is not just a technical issue. It's not simply in control of the military. The process is going forward only as an act of faith. All of those questions are much more about organizations and about political will and about the role that publicity says than the notion that people who are under stress always say the process is now going forward. And so that's what the legislature is going to be involved in. But there isn't a whole – I can't imagine this being an issue where there's going to be a lot of legislation coming out and where it gets referred to committees. This is where oversight and publicity and holding people accountable in a public sense is important.
Well, it's an opportunity for posturing in a political year, right?
Well, it's interesting also, the opening day of the legislature, you know, is always a bit of a set piece in terms of a lot of the folks that we heard from that Catherine spoke with earlier are advocacy folks, you know, and they are showing up saying, hey, here is our agenda. Here's what we are looking for. Actually, I'm going to take a little risk. I think that Catherine actually may be with us. Catherine, if you can give us a sense more of sort of what the feel is like at the Capitol today. Well, at any rate, it was a bit, chaotic. A lot of folks down there. As again, opening day, Neil, this is something that you have seen for a long time. One aspect that is a little bit different this year, I would say, because it is an election year, we all know that going in. But again, Colleen Hanabusa, when she had her announcement, she was joined by a great deal of the leadership of this legislature. Scott Psyche, Ron Cochi, Sylvia Luke, Neil, how does that bode for this session itself and sort of that that political flavor that definitely is going to be part of that?
Well, the legislature always goes through during election years this kind of facade that the election year doesn't affect us, that we're going to do our kind of work.
But how astute
or unastute you have to be when you see this group of people up there, including the legislative leaders. And remember that a lot of these leaders were kind of in favor of Ige coming in because he was one of them. That didn't mean they liked him a lot, right, but that he knew the process. And all of a sudden, they're there. And a lot of this stuff will operate sort of sub rosa. What's so interesting is that in this entire discussion, the word Republican or opposition has never come up. If this were a significant two-party state, if you didn't have more than a mini handful of Republican legislators, you can bet that the political aspects of this and a kind of much more straightforward opposition to the process would be out there. You're not hearing about it. You're not likely to hear about it. No one's going to pay attention to it if you do. The media covers it about as much as they cover the crossword puzzles. And and that's what the very dynamic is different here, that if you want to see how one-party a state this is, you realize that from moment one, this gets defined as ferment within the Democratic Party. Now, I don't know who the Republican candidate is going to be, if they can get a good one, but that's how the process is working.
We've got some more, a couple more of what we refer to as MOS, men on the street interviews. Let's hear a couple more of those voices that Catherine Cruz gathered this morning.
I've been with a group on Persist Thursdays that have been meeting here for months now. And the two main issues that we've been interested in are healthcare issues, wide range, you know, since the CHIP hasn't been funded by the federal government yet. What if the ACA goes away? What are we going to do about it on a state and local level? So we've been meeting with Representative Mizuno about that. And the other one has been prison reform, which I don't know as much about. One of our other friends that have been joining us on Thursdays, Ray Lynn, has been doing most of that. But we visit the offices of those that we think could help us with those issues.
Okay, and you're a retired physician, and so that's why healthcare is near and dear to your heart.
Yeah, particularly women's health, which I think always is being attacked in various ways. Yes, I devoted my entire career to that, and I really don't want to see our ability to move forward taken away from us.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you. I appreciate you taking time to chat with us.
Okay. Thanks very much.
I've like wanted to help get like an internship for like the state government, but like I wasn't sure. But then like I saw like flyers around school, like advertising like being able to like get like an internship here. I was like, oh, that's pretty.
And are you interested in running for office someday?
Maybe.
So, what issues are important to you, just in your general life?
Particularly like LGBT issues and like pro-choice and such things.
Have you been tracking any bills, any legislation?
Not currently.
But are you just concerned because of the actions taken by the Trump administration on these programs?
Yeah.
And so what are you looking forward to most this session, I think?
I'm mostly looking forward to, like, learning more about, like, government. I feel like it'll be, like, a really, like, great experience.
We've been hearing a number of voices about related to today's opening day at the state capitol, and we're going to try to hook into my co-host Catherine Cruz live at the capitol. Catherine.
Hi, Chris.
Hi.
I don't know if you can hear me.
I can, yes.
It's getting pretty crowded down here, kind of elbow to elbow. The thousands of people that were marching have now joined the rest of the public here at the state capitol. They are starting the part of the rally down in the rotunda. You could probably hear some of the speeches in the background. But it is getting pretty crowded as we get to the noon hour. And I think it's today you might have mentioned earlier that the activity will then go over to the palace, and there will be some more speeches, and that will continue through the rest of the afternoon. But again, we're kind of at the height of the opening day celebration, and you know, we like you said, we've been talking with the governor and with lawmakers about how we go forward. I know state budget and finance officials will be looking to see how the tax reform bill that Congress has passed will have on our coffers. Very important as we look at state spending, as lawmakers try and reconcile the executive budget and the legislative budget in the months to come. But that is the latest down here at the state capitol. Back to you.
Catherine, thank you very much. And that's it for today's edition of The Conversation. I'd like to thank our news director, Bill Dorman, and contributing editor, Neil Milner, for joining me in the studio. Tomorrow we'll break down last weekend's false missile alert with a former deputy commander of U.S. Pacific Command, Lieutenant General Dan Leaf. And we want to hear about your experiences during that false alarm. You can call our talkback line. Tell us what you saw, heard, or felt during those 38 minutes. The number for that is 808-792-8217. Email is talkback at hawaiipublicradio.org. We're on Facebook at The Conversation, Twitter at HI Conversation. You can find audio of this show at hawaiipublicradio.org. I'm Chris Vandercook, and we thank you for joining us on The Conversation. We'll be back tomorrow.